This coming week, sunrise will be at 7:35, sunset at 10 past 4. Temperatures will be much lower at around 3 to 5 degrees Celsius.
Welcome to the Sandwell News for the blind and visually impaired community living in and around Sandwell for the 15th of November, which is when it's due to drop through your letterbox.
Some highlights from the Express and Star this week. Wednesday's news. Community spirit in Tiverdale. Promise of new technology to eliminate spoof phone calls within a year. Sandwell Conservatives elect new leader. Thursday's news. Phone service affected after car hits telegraph pole in Wensbury. Above average smoking in Sandwell. Black Country, the child obesity capital of the UK. Apply for your new blue badge online. Saturday's news. A salute to the heroes we must always remember. Samosa boy, sweet samosas. Monday's news. Beacon Centre plea for befrienders. Our region's towns amongst the worst off. Council tax and cost of garden waste collection due to rise. Metro fares set to increase by up to 50 pence. Tuesday's news. Get protected with your flu jab. West Bromwich Albion debrief.
All those and a lot more coming up courtesy of Express and Star Publications. And as always, we'll have the listings for the week ahead for radio and audio described TV. An article about the process of training a guide dog, part two of that series. And I think we'll be able to squeeze in one about gardening tips for this month. So let's get straight on with the first day's news.
Hi everyone, it's Mia. And today I'm going to be reading some newspaper articles from the Express and Star, Wednesday the 5th of November. I hope everyone is well and enjoying this autumn season. Halloween's just passed, which means we're finally into the Christmas countdown and I cannot wait. Have you all got any Christmas plans or started your Christmas shopping? I'd love to know. Let's begin. Crime wave thief jailed for attack. Prolific shoplifter smashed bottle of whiskey over the head of a Tesco worker, court told. A violent thief has been described as a one-man crime wave as he was jailed. Levi Robertson, 27, from Wensbury, smashed a bottle of whiskey into the head of a Tesco security guard and also threatened to stab a worker at Asda. Judge Laura Hobson sentenced Robertson to 85 weeks imprisonment, 69 weeks for the bottle attack, and the rest for various thefts and assault. He pleads guilty to assault, causing actual bodily harm, 2 counts of assault and 8 counts of shoplifting at Wolverhampton Crown Court. Robertson, of Walsall Road, Wensbury, took items including alcohol, baby formula, clothes and Yankee candles from shops in Walsall and Willenhall and threatened violence when confronted. The judge told him, "You committed 12 crimes in rapid succession over 6 weeks. The most serious offence was assaulting a security guard with a bottle, which caused the victim who went to work to help the public serious injury. Shoplifting is not a victimless crime. Businesses have to raise prices to compensate for all the theft." Colourful parade to mark Sikhism founder's birthday. Sikhs from across the Black Country came together to celebrate the birth of their religion's founder. Thousands of people took part in Sunday's annual parade through the streets of Sandwell to celebrate 556 years since the birth of Guru Nanak Dev Ji. There was colour, traditional clothing and music as people lined the route from the Guru Har Rai Gurdwara in West Bromwich through Albury and down Smethwick High Street to the Guru Nanak Gurdwara. Worshippers also made time to come to one of the 6 Gurdwaras en route to pray and pay their respects at the Manji Sahib. There was food and drink on offer along the route, all provided for free and served by volunteers. Friendly neighbourhood that is big on community spirit. This quiet residential area on the edge of Sandwell is full of community friendliness and people looking out for each other. Tiverdale, straddling the area between Dudley, Albury and Tipton, was largely developed from the mid-19th century around the main road from Albury and Dudley. The main industries of the area were coal mining and stone quarrying, and it became a centre for industries such as iron and brick manufacture. While Tiverdale Tram Workshops opened along the main Tiverdale Road in 1907 and operated until 1930, before the tramway closed in 1939, as trams were phased out in favour of motorised buses. The opening of the Birmingham New Road in 1927 provided a more direct route through the area, having been divided along the Dudley and Tipton sections, and Tiverdale began to expand more with the creation of a number of housing estates, such as the Grace Mary Estate, and following the Second World War, the Tiverdale Hall Estate. The area was also massively affected by the war, with several air raids by the Luftwaffe destroying homes and killing 27 people. The Luftwaffe are believed to have targeted these areas of Tiverdale due to their proximity to the Big Bertha anti-aircraft gun, which was located near City Road. Modern-day Tiverdale shows little sign of the scars of war, with new-build estates still being built, including the Tiverdale Hall Estate, where Tiverdale FC built its ground, the beaches in 1974, and has remained a big part of the community. There are plenty of places to find shops around the community, as well as numerous hair and beauty salons, and the very unique Tiverdale Micro Pub, which has become a popular spot for a pint and a chat. Among those who call Tiverdale home are 88-year-old Pauline Edwards, who said she and her family had moved to the area from Yorkshire when she was young, and she'd never felt the need to move anywhere else. She said, "I lived on the Grace Mary Estate through my 20s, and then I got married and was on the waiting list for 6 years for a house. And then they gave me the one I live in on Tower Road. So I've been living here for 66 years. It's changed quite a lot, and it isn't like it used to be, but I think there are worse places when I read the paper. So I like it here, and I think it's the people who make it. When I first came to this area, it was part of Rowley Regis, but it's Tiverdale, and it's all I've ever known, and I like to say that it suits me well. On Tower Road, which is where Pauline calls home, the best one Goshall's general store was one of the shops keeping busy with a steady stream of customers. It was being run and managed by Lakee Vaniswaran, who said he had moved to the area from Sri Lanka and said he had always felt very welcome. He said, "I've been living here for 3 years now and have always found the area to be nice and quiet. People are also really nice and I have a lot of customers coming in, so I think this is a nice area to work and live in." Someone who was keen to talk about the community spirit was 28-year-old Josie Brooks, who said she was born in Tiverdale and said the people would be there for anyone in need. She said, "I think it's nice around here, and I'm always close to family, and I don't think it has changed all that much over the years. I will say that I lost my mum in December, and the community who knew my dad growing up around here all pulled together and did a lovely collection for her. So I think it's a very close-knit community, and there's lots of lovely people around here. If you would like us to highlight your neighbourhood, please contact daniel.stacey@jpress.co.uk. And I just wanted to describe some of the pictures in the article. In the top left corner, we've got Lakee Vaniswaran. In front of his Best One shop, he's smiling, he seems to really enjoy living in Tiverdale. Then, to the right of that, in the top right corner, we have Tiverdale Football Club, a sign showing that it's a big part of the community. Then we also have some pictures of Pauline Edwards, who said she loves Tiverdale, and it's all she's ever known. And then a picture of Tiverdale itself, being described as a close-knit community. And it sure does seem that. New technology to eliminate spoof phone calls within the year. New call tracing to hunt down scammers and victims will receive faster support. Mobile networks including BT, EE, Vodafone, Three, and Virgin Media O2 are to block foreign call centres from impersonating banks in a crackdown to eliminate call spoofing within a year. New call tracing technology will hunt down scammers and victims, will receive faster support, the Home Office said. The agreement between the government and industry will see a raft of measures to safeguard the UK's mobile network from fraud. The increased protection will involve identifying the provider that connects the call to the customer and asking who they got the call from, with the process continuing upstream until the source of the call is identified, the Home Office said. Victims will also see swifter support from phone networks, with help times to be cut to 2 weeks. Scam calls and texts are a daily frustration for many, with criminals based abroad often impersonating trusted organisations like banks and government departments to deceive people to steal money or personal information. Britain's biggest mobile networks have committed to upgrade their network within the next year to eliminate the ability for foreign call centres to spoof UK numbers. Figures suggest that 96% of mobile users decide whether to answer a call based on the number displayed on their screen, with three quarters unlikely to pick up if it is an unknown international number. Advanced call tracing technology will also be rolled out across mobile networks to give police the intelligence to track down scammers operating across the country and dismantle their operations. AI will also be deployed to identify and block suspicious calls and texts, halting scammers before they can reach users' mobiles. Minister for Fraud, Lord Hanson, said spoofed calls allow scammers to deceive the public with fake identities and false promises. This government is committed to tackling fraud. Sandwell Tories elect new leader. Sandwell Conservatives have elected a new leader after their previous one left the party last month. Councillor Amrita Dunn has been chosen to lead the four-strong opposition group on Sandwell Council after Councillor Will Gill left the party last month to sit as an independent. Councillor Dunn, who represents the Tiverdale ward, said she was honoured to lead a dedicated group of councillors. She said her big concerns included the unchecked growth and poor regulation of houses in multiple occupation, HMOs, which she said were having a serious impact on neighbourhoods across the borough. Sandwell deserves a council that listens, is transparent, and delivers for its residents, said Councillor Dunn. I will continue to hold this council to account for its failures on issues like HMOs.
Hello, this is Jan Lloyd, reading articles from the Express and Star on the 6th of November. Phone services are affected after car hits telegraph pole, by Deborah Hardiman. Some residents and businesses' premises were left without phone and broadband services after a car crashed into a telegraph pole in Wensbury. The incident happened in Leabrook Road on the Tipton border with Wensbury at about 6 a.m. yesterday. The incident involved a blue car which struck the pole, uprooting it from the pavement, resulting in it landing several feet away on the ground. Sam Greenaway, aged 36, of the Coppice, said, "I saw the aftermath when I took my children to school just after 8 a.m. The communications pole was on the ground and a blue car there with really bad damage in the middle of the bonnet. The battery was hanging out of the engine compartment." And the article is accompanied by a photograph of presumably Sandwell Council workmen who are trying to restore the phone and broadband services, with a huge lorry with a crane attached to it and a big hole in the road where the thing has been uprooted. Smoking League Table Reveals Above Average Cigarette Use, by Ella Pickover. One area of the West Midlands has bucked a national trend by seeing the number of people smoking cigarettes to go up. Figures today reveal that smoking is generally diminishing, and nationally vaping has overtaken cigarette use for the first time. But in Sandwell, new figures show numbers are slightly up. It is one of only a handful of areas across the UK where more people are smoking, with 16.6% of adults using cigarettes in the period from 2020 to 2024. That is up from 16.3% in 2019 to 2023 and makes it the 13th highest in the UK for numbers who use cigarettes. The regional list is dominated by urban areas, although figures also remain high in Telford and Wrekin. A recent report by the organisation ASH recently said there were approximately 54,900 smokers within Telford and Shropshire combined, and that 27% of people in routine and manual occupations smoke. Today's figures reveal that virtually all areas of the West Midlands have above average smoking levels. One in 10 adults aged 16 and over in Britain use e-cigarettes every day or occasionally, according to 2024 data from the Office of National Statistics, the ONS. Only Shropshire, Powys, Stafford and Lichfield come below that level. Nationally, there are now around 5.4 million vapers and 4.9 million smokers, the ONS figures suggest. The proportion of women who vape daily or occasionally has increased, while it has decreased amongst men, according to the figures. Around 2.7% of those who had never smoked reported using an e-cigarette daily or occasionally. And the table is represented like this. Sandwell, 16.6%, up 0.3%. Stoke-on-Trent, 14.4%, down by 0.9%. Birmingham, 14.3%, down by 0.5%. Walsall, 13.6%, down by 0.1%. Wolverhampton, 12.8%, down by 0.4%. Telford and Wrekin, 12.6%, down by 1.7%. Cannock Chase, 12.5%, down by 1.3%. Worcester, 12.3%, down by 0.2%. Dudley, 11.5%, down by 0.4%. Wyre Forest, 10.3%, down by 0.7%. Shropshire, 9.6%, down by 1.5%. Powys, 9.5%, down by 1.6%. Stafford, 8.2%, down by 1.4%. And Lichfield, 7.4%, down by 1.1%. Obesity capital of the country. We have the fattest children, with almost one-third of 11-year-olds overweight, by Christine Dyer. The Black Country is the child obesity capital of England, with almost one-third of older primary school children severely overweight. Sandwell officially has the highest proportion of obese 11-year-olds in the country, with 30.7% deemed to have a serious weight problem. And Wolverhampton and Walsall are close behind, with both areas in the top six for obesity levels in England. Alarmingly, almost 7% of 4- and 5-year-olds in parts of our region are clusters of obese, compared to a national average of around 10%. Wolverhampton is fourth on the list for obesity in England among Year 6 pupils. The official figures come from the National Child Measurement Programme. Experts today suggested deprived urban areas are worst hit, and the figures are also high among ethnic groups. It comes amid ongoing concern that large parts of the population in the West Midlands are ignoring messages about the importance of healthy eating. Schools now serve up healthier meals and students are taught about nutrition. But the rise of takeaway outlets and the ease of home deliveries mean that for many, it is more convenient to consume high-fat and calorific meals. Today's figures come weeks after analysis from the Food Foundation reveals shocking health and dietary inequalities across England, with dental decay, obesity, diabetes and short life expectancy afflicting deprived constituencies in the West Midlands. While almost a third of children in Sandwell are obese, the figure in affluent St Albans is just 11%, and almost 40% of Wolverhampton children have tooth decay, compared to a national average of around 10%. And the article, which is quite a sad article, isn't it, shows a picture of two very chubby little children's feet standing on some scales. And it says almost a third of children in the West Midlands are obese, three times the rate in more affluent areas of England. Apply for your new Blue Badge online. From November 2025, all Blue Badge applications and renewals in Sandwell must be made through the online My Sandwell portal. The process is quick and can be done on your home laptop or smart device. Blue Badges help people with disabilities or health conditions to park closer to their destination. You can apply for a badge for yourself, on behalf of somebody else, or an organisation that transports people who need a Blue Badge. If you already use My Sandwell to make payments to the council, book appointments at the tip or report a missed bin, you can just log in with your usual details. If not, registering for an account is quick and simple. All you need is an email account. Someone can apply for a Blue Badge on your behalf too. Information can be found online at sandwell.gov.uk/bluebadge. Of course, if you do need help applying for a blue badge, Sandwell's visually impaired team can help too. You can call 0121 525 4810 if you need advice or assistance. Double honours for Borough Leisure Trust in annual industry awards. Sandwell Leisure Trust, the SLT, has been awarded two prestigious honours in the UK Active Awards for 2025, which herald the vital role of the UK's physical activity sector. SLT, which runs and maintains 8 facilities on behalf of Sandwell Metropolitan Borough Council, landed the Outstanding Leadership Team and Digital Transformation Awards at a glittering industry celebration event in the ICC at Birmingham. In the former, the SLT senior leadership won for its clear vision and ability to navigate significant challenges while consistently putting the community at the heart of the operations. The Digital Transformation Award typically recognises organisations that have fundamentally changed their operations by leveraging smart digital technologies. SLT CEO Mark Braithwaite said, "We were thrilled to have been nominated for 3 awards and then, on the night, to be awarded 2, Digital Transformation and Outstanding Team Leadership, was phenomenal. The team have all made massive contributions and deserve the recognition for both awards. We've also been really well supported by Sandwell Council, and the partnership is a great example of how a leisure operator and their local authority can drive real change. The coveted UK Active Awards showcase the best of the industry in terms of innovation, excellence and impact on health, well-being and fitness."
Hello, it's Rachel here, and I've got some readings for you from the 7th of November. Drug Dealing Addict 25 Handed a Second Chance by Adam Smith. A Tipton drug dealer turned waiter who was arrested with crack, heroin and a knife has avoided jail after claiming he was forced into an abortive life of crime. After being spotted by police in Tipton on August 30th last year, Riaz Kahar was chased into Anderson Close where he was arrested. Searching Kahar of Park Street, Tipton, police officers found crack, heroin, £425 cash and a large knife with an orange handle. Kahar, 25, pleaded guilty to possessing Class A drugs with intent to supply and possessing a knife in a public place and was sentenced at Wolverhampton Crown Court on Tuesday. Prosecutor Nigel Stelling told the court, "The defendant was seen running from a red Audi and into Anderson Road. When police got to Anderson Road, they saw the defendant with others. After a foot chase, he was arrested. Police found he had £425 of cash, crack cocaine and wraps of heroin. He also had a knife with an orange handle." In mitigation, the court heard Kahar had become addicted to drugs and was selling the crack and heroin to work off a debt. In the subsequent year, he had kicked his habit and begun working at his uncle's restaurant as a waiter. His mother, who paid the drug debt off, was in court to support him. He had no previous convictions. Judge Mark Brown, KC, sentenced Kahar to 21 months imprisonment, but suspended the sentence for 2 years. He said, "This offence should be serious enough for an immediate custodial sentence. However, you have stopped taking drugs and now have a job. I am willing to give you a chance and suspend the sentence. You will need to attend 15 rehabilitation days and 150 hours of unpaid work. You will have to pay £500 towards the cost of the case." Murder Probe as Teen Found Dead by Dan Stacey. A man has been arrested on suspicion of murder after a 19-year-old woman was found dead in Oldbury. West Midlands police were called just before 9:50pm on Wednesday to Park Street after a woman was found with serious injuries. Despite the best efforts of paramedics, she was pronounced dead at the scene. A 41-year-old man who is believed to be known to the teenage woman has been arrested on suspicion of murder. A police cordon could be seen stretched across an area of the industrial estate and a blue police tent was also visible at the scene. The tape was taken down around 4:30pm yesterday. A West Midlands police spokesperson said, We were called just before 9:50 p.m. to Park Street after a 19-year-old woman was found with serious injuries. Despite the best efforts of paramedics, there was nothing that could be done to save her, and she was pronounced dead at the scene. Our thoughts are with her loved ones. A 41-year-old man, who is believed to be known to the woman, has been arrested on suspicion of murder. He remains in custody for questioning. Anyone with information has been asked to contact West Midlands Police via 101, quoting log reference 5978 of November 5th. Along with the article is a photograph. The caption reads, "An investigation tent at the scene." And the photograph shows a police car and the blue tent and the blue tape that has been put around the scene. Yob, who tried to steal a police taser, avoids prison. By Adam Smith. A Smithwick yob who tried to steal a police taser then spat, punched and racially abused police officers before pretending to have a fit to launch another attack has avoided jail. Braden Fairhurst, 21, also pretended to be having a fit in Oldbury custody suite, and when officers went to his aid, he tried to steal a baton and overpower them before he was restrained. Fairhurst pleaded guilty at Wolverhampton Crown Court to assaulting an emergency worker undertaking their duties and racial harassment, causing the victim alarm or distress, whilst using threatening and abusive behaviour. On February 14th and March 7th this year, Fairhurst of South Road attacked officers who responded to pleas of help from his mental health carers, who he had attacked. He kicked and punched the police officers, and then, at Oldbury Custody Suite, continued assaulting officers. He repeated his devious trick of pretending to be choking or having a fit, only to turn on officers helping him. Prosecuting Dean Easthope said, "On March 7th, the responding officers agreed not to pursue any further action after discussing Fairhurst with his carers, until he launched himself at the police car and punched the windscreen. He then spat and punched a female PC in the face with such force it left her dazed. He said he did not mean to hit the officer but was aiming at his carer. He also tried to grab an officer's taser but was overpowered and restrained. Later that day, in the custody suite, the defendant pretended to have a fit, and when an officer got near to him, tried to overpower him and steal his baton. When Fairhurst saw an Indian police officer in the custody suite, he launched into a vile racist rant. Fairhurst appeared at Wolverhampton Crown Court via video link from his secure mental health unit, which had to mute the microphone due to his constant shouting and chuntering. He pleaded guilty to assaulting emergency workers in the course of their duty and racially aggravated harassment. His previous convictions include battery, assaulting emergency workers and racial harassment. In mitigation, the court heard Fairhurst suffered from mental health issues and had pleaded guilty at an early stage. He currently is in a secure mental health unit and requires two carers to accompany him everywhere. District Judge Ian Strongman sentenced Fairhurst to 15 weeks imprisonment, suspended for 12 months, a four-month curfew between 6 p.m. and 6 a.m, then 6 months on an electronic tag, and ordained him to pay £200 to each police officer. When realising he will have to pay £25 a month, Fairhurst began gesticulating at the camera, which was still on mute. The judge added, "You have relevant previous convictions and have continually acted aggressively and in a bullying way. You show no empathy to those people who you attacked, despite trying to help you, or any remorse."
Hello everyone, this is Linda, reading from Saturday the 8th of November's Express and Star. Man charged with 19-year-old's murder. A man has been charged with murdering a 19-year-old woman in Oldbury. Mohammed Azim, aged 41, has been charged after a woman was found with serious injuries in Oldbury on Wednesday night. Lily Whitehouse was found with serious injuries in Park Street at around 9:50 p.m. Despite the best efforts of paramedics, she was pronounced dead at the scene. Azim was due to appear before Wolverhampton Magistrates Court yesterday. A salute to the heroes that we must always remember. an article by Dan Morris. In a busy week that has seen the death of Dick Cheney and the raising of Sir Golden Balls Beckham himself, about time, well done Dave, we now with pride must give due attention to what is always the most important story at this time of year. Somberly and with humility, this weekend we'll stop and rightly bow our heads in thanks to the sacrifices of generations of our armed forces personnel with Remembrance Sunday. Across the UK, parades and commemorations will honour the fallen heroes to whom we owe the preservation of our way of life, our freedom and our future. It is an occasion that deserves nothing less than universal respect, acknowledgement and gratitude. I vividly remember my first Remembrance Sunday parade. I was 5 years old, and part of a troop of primary schoolers proudly wearing our poppies as we stood outside our local church. As a brass band played and veterans and local dignitaries marched past us, I remember experiencing a universal mood for the first time. Sadness and reflection, but above all, pride. In the 33 years since, I have done my best to attend the same parade each November, and my heart has been warmed at the sight of many of the same faces from that first outing doing the same. It is something I will do my utmost to do until the day I die, because some things, quite simply, should always be remembered. When I was 17, I was busy choosing which iPod to buy. When my grandfather was 17, he was fighting for king and country. By the time he was 21, he had experienced more horrors than anyone should have to endure or witness in a lifetime. And like many veterans of his era, he seldom spoke a word of them in all the decades that followed. What was asked of him and all those by his side was something that should never have to have been asked. But he paid that price gladly, knowing that the greatest wonders of the world, choice, liberty and human rights, were worth nothing if we were to let bullies take them from us. Generations both before and since have fought for the same values. And this Remembrance Sunday, we must recognise that those values should continue to be fought for whenever they are threatened. An old friend of mine has been a serving Royal Marine since he was 18 years old. As the slogan goes, 99.99% need not apply, and he has certainly always been made of the strong 0.01% that the branch demands. He is about to become a father, and I'm sure he will forgive me for publicly congratulating him on that one. But above that, I will say the same thing I've said to him on countless occasions. Thank you for going. It has meant that I have never had to, and that my own child can grow up in a world where her ambitions are untethered, her welfare is assured, and her sacrosanct freedom is preserved. As Christmas approaches, we are reminded by charities, including the Salvation Army, of how many of our citizens will be spending Yuletide sleeping on the streets. I feel a particular pang of disgust and shame when I think of how many of these unfortunate individuals may be veterans, who have given their best years precisely to ensure that the rest of us can enjoy such paltry pleasures, no pun intended, as a turkey dinner. More needs to be done to support our ex-service people. And in this regard, Ms. Reeves better shape up soon. For years, charitable organisations such as the Royal British Legion and Help for Heroes have done wonders in highlighting the plight often faced by veterans, and have worked miracles in raising funds to help them in life they have earned 100 times over. But it should not be for them to have to lead this charge. As soon as my daughter is old and patient enough, she'll be joining me for our local remembrance parade, and I hope that attending it is something she keeps up long after I am dust. As I look into her eyes while writing, I would be proud if she were ever to choose a military career, but precisely because of the freedoms our brave men and women in the armed forces have fought for, I'm even more proud that the choice will always be hers. More than anything, on her behalf, and once again on mine, I will sign off this week by saying thank you to those who have given themselves to protecting us and to those who still do. We owe you everything, and that is something that must never be forgotten. My family first thought I was crazy to make sweet samosas. It's a brand new concept in how to cook and serve one of the more traditional foods from the Indian subcontinent, and one which is growing more and more popular across the region. A samosa is something which carries more than 1,000 years of tradition and which people associate with Asian cooking, popular at Indian restaurants as a starter, and which is often seen as a savoury item filled with potato or a mixture of chicken or lamb. However, one person has taken the humble samosa and created a new way of cooking and serving them, and what started as a fun experiment in the kitchen has quickly turned into something people couldn't stop talking about or eating. Zain Tayyub and his company Samosa Boy have been providing a unique taste of Asia from a mobile stall at the MacArthur Glen retail outlet in Cannock, with a range of baked, not fried, savoury and sweet samosas available, including Korean lamb barbecue and Mexican chicken, and sweet options filled with Nutella and Kinder Bueno. Mr. Tayyub said he had started working on the concept during the COVID-19 lockdown, and said that the idea had been met with a mixed view when he first announced he was doing it. He said, "My family in the beginning thought I was crazy because I come from a South Asian background, and when I told them about the idea, it was almost like blasphemy, as samosas are so embedded in the culture. However, there were some people who thought the idea was brilliant, as we are a very progressive nation and we are continuously innovating and creating new things. So it was a mix of some people being supportive and others thinking I was absolutely crazy. What I did is give them people who would give honest feedback, as I'm someone who is overly critical and want everything to be done to the highest level and as perfect as can be." Mr. Tayyub said he had his team had gone through about 17 different iterations of pastry and fillings before officially starting to sell them, and said that it had been a long process to ensure the samosas were right and it was commercially viable. He said the idea of the company came from other brands who have taken a throwaway traditional product like a donut and created a massive global brand around that, and that was the ambition with Samosa Boy. No one's ever really made them sweet before. He said the grander plan of the company, which has headquarters in Wolverhampton, was to expand along all the MacArthur Glen sites in the country and also build the brand in other shopping centres. This plan is about getting people back on their feet. By Richard Parker, West Midlands Mayor. I grew up in a working class community that believed in hard work and fairness. You did your bit, looked out for your neighbours and expected the same back. That's still the spirit I see every day across the Black Country and in people who want to work, who care about their families and who take pride in where they're from. But too many people tell me the same story. They've done everything right, yet still feel shut out from opportunity. Wages haven't kept up. Secure jobs are harder to find. Young people are moving away to find work. The system doesn't feel fair anymore. I understand why people are frustrated. You've been promised change before and nothing really moved on. You've seen people who should be working paid to stay at home. That has to change. We've lost too many good jobs and too much confidence. And when that happens, people stop believing that politics can make a difference. We won't fix this region by shouting from the sidelines and blaming others. We need to actually shift the dial. We have a moral and economic justification to do so. The only way things get better for us and our kids is if we roll up our sleeves and make it happen. That's why this week I launched West Midlands Works, our plan to help more local people into good, secure, fairly well-paid jobs. It's not about handouts anymore. It's about getting people back on their feet, back to work, giving them support and making work pay. We're setting up neighbourhood hubs where people can get help to find well-paid work, retrain or tackle the health problems that stop them working. And we're bringing together the NHS, councils and local employers so that when someone loses their job, they don't fall through the cracks. We're backing good work, jobs that give you a career with a sense of purpose and stability, not just a payslip. We've already seen what works. We have the evidence and the stories of people who haven't worked for decades now in employment. The Coventry Job Shop has helped thousands back into work. Wolves at Work and Walsall Works have supported people into real, secure jobs. These are local successes we can build on and grow. This plan is about putting power where it belongs and going to where the issues need to be fixed in our communities. There is no point waiting for another roll of the dice. We can't wait for London. Rolling our sleeves up locally and fixing the system. We will work with partners like Pat McFadden and his team in the Department for Work and Pensions to fix the system from the ground up. It won't change overnight. I'm not going to pretend it will. But it is the start of doing things differently. Of course, there will always be people who can't work because of illness, disability or caring responsibilities, and we have a duty to stand by them. A fair society supports people when they need help, but also helps those who can work to do so. We can't rebuild our region by walking away from it. We do it by standing up for it. I'm not going to play the blame game, I'm just getting on with it. By backing local people, by believing in fairness again, and by providing that this region still knows how to graft, make and build. We've been knocked back before and we've always got back up, stronger. West Midlands Works is how we do it again. War Memorial back in place. Replacement for Remembrance Sunday after Yobs burned it using barbecue. A vandalised war memorial on Landmark Bar Beacon has been repaired just in time for Remembrance Sunday. The damage happened in early October when a memorial disc was badly burned by a disposable barbecue. Now a replacement disc has been hastily commissioned by Bar Beacon Trust at a cost of almost £400. The work was rushed through in order for it to be available for the annual remembrance event at the Landmark, as was installed this week. The damage to the memorial appalled many who enjoy walking on Bar Beacon. New signage has also been set up to remind visitors that barbecues are not permitted on site. It is the second time the disc has been replaced this year because of damage, and town leaders have appealed for people to respect what the memorial stands for. Councillor Adrian Andrew, deputy leader of Walsall Council and chair of the Bar Beacon Trust, said, Bar Beacon holds a special place in our borough's history. It's a place of remembrance, pride and reflection. The damage caused to the memorial was completely unacceptable and deeply disrespectful. We're grateful to the Bar Beacon Trust for funding the replacement discs and to the council teams who have made the repairs happen. I'd urge everyone visiting the site to treat it with care and respect. I would also like to point out that disposable barbecues and open flames are strictly prohibited at Bar Beacon. Services to mark remembrance are set to take place across the region to honour those who have served and sacrificed for their country, with events being held on Sunday and also to mark Tuesday's Armistice Day.
Hello, this is Janet reading from the Express and Star for Monday, November the 10th. The following is not an article from the Express and Star, but it is from Sue Clothier, who was a reader for Talking Newspaper for a good many years. It is Sue who now checks the Express and Star daily and has the difficult job of deciding which articles are to be read. Fungus Foray by Sue Clothier. This is the time of year when fungi make their brief appearance in grassland or sometimes on branches. The fungus foray in the grounds of Oak House, West Bromwich, last weekend satisfyingly produced about a dozen different sorts. It was led by expert Lucas Large from Birmingham Museums. Two little girls among our group were very good at spotting specimens the grown-ups missed. Not surprising, as some disguise themselves as curled up brown leaves or as small as a drawing pin. They're not all round either. Some are like blobs of yellow jelly or miniature white candlesticks on a branch. And the shaggy white ink caps are like unopened umbrellas or round ice lollies. Some smell distinctive and Lucas cut another in half to show how it changed colour inside when exposed to the air. Altogether, much more interesting than supermarket mushrooms. Plea for befrienders at Sight Loss Centre. A leading sight loss charity has launched a campaign which urges people to help change someone's life by offering them a friendly voice. The Beacon Centre for the Blind in Sedgley is looking for volunteers to join its befriending service through its What Could You Do in 30 Minutes campaign. It highlights how a simple weekly phone call can make a huge difference to someone living with a visual impairment or loneliness, while offering volunteers a rewarding experience too. Beacon's befriending service pairs volunteers with people who are blind or partially sighted or at risk of loneliness to offer companionship and regular conversation by phone. Volunteers only need around 30 minutes a week and full support and training is provided. Beacon Centre Head of Health and Wellbeing, Becky Green, said, "Befriending doesn't take up a lot of time, but it means the world to someone who might otherwise spend their week without a friendly voice to talk to. We'd love to hear from anyone who can spare time to make a difference." Befriender Katie Jepson said, "As someone who regularly works from home on Fridays, I thought that 30 minutes each week would be a good way to give back to the community and give me someone to talk to whilst at home. I have loved being a phone befriender to my befriendee. Every week on Friday at lunch, I give her a call to ask about her week. I always end our calls feeling happy and uplifted after speaking with her. Anyone interested in signing up as a befriending volunteer can email enquiries@beaconvision.org or call 01902 880 111. Our towns are among the worst off. 5 out of 10 of the most deprived areas in the country are in the West Midlands, according to new figures. New data released by the Office of National Statistics found that Sandwell was the second most deprived area in the country. Leicester was ranked most deprived. Wolverhampton, Walsall, Stoke-on-Trent and Birmingham also ranked in the top 10. By contrast, the 10 wealthiest local authority areas were all in the South East. The figures are based on average household disposable income, which found that the average household in Sandwell had just £16,562 a year left over to live on once essential bills such as housing, council tax and energy costs were taken into account. The figure was a fifth of the wealthiest area of the country, Westminster and the City of London, where the average household had £79,555 a year to live on. Wolverhampton took eighth spot, being marginally better off than Bradford, which with a disposable income of £18,174 a year. The figures showed that 27.2% of working-age residents were out of work with long-time sickness, a major cause of poverty. The people of Walsall were just £25 a year better off on £18,199, with a lack of high-paid work and health inequalities highlighted as major problems. Elsewhere in the region, Lichfield was found to be the most affluent area with an average gross disposable household income of £26,610 a year, followed by South Staffordshire on £25,399 and Stafford on £24,013. Council tax set to rise in bid to fill a £17 million hole. Council tax and the cost of garden waste collections are set to rise in a Black Country borough to cover a £17 million hole in the council's budget. Sandwell Council said it would make more than £8 million of cuts and savings, as well as tap into just over £9 million from its reserves to cover the shortfall in the finances for 2026 to 27. The proposed 4.99% increase in council tax would see the average Band D bill rise by £91 from April next year and is likely to rise even higher once the precepts from the Fire Service, Police and West Midlands Combined Authority are set. Bands A and B, which cover around three quarters of Sandwell households, would rise by around £60 and £70 respectively for the council services alone. The cost of green bin waste collections would increase in 2027. The council tax increase is predicted to bring in an extra £7 million and the increased fee for garden waste collections an extra £200,000. The council's medium-term financial plan also reveals the expected budget deficits for the next 5 years, including £26 million in 2027 to 28, rising to £48 million by 2030-31, cuts and savings between £8 and £10 million would have to be made each year until 2031, but would only chip away at the huge gaps. Fewer housing schemes leaves council with £625,000 black hole. Lack of new developments since COVID caused income to drop off, say officials. A Black Country council is expecting to make £625,000 less from planning applications this year because of a drop in large housing developments. Sandwell Council said the plunge in income was because of a lack of developers coming forward to build across the Black Country borough since the COVID-19 pandemic. The Labour-run council also blamed the lack of available land as well as the amount of contaminated land which deterred developers. Councillor Peter Hughes, Cabinet Member for Regeneration and Infrastructure, told a council scrutiny meeting the significant drop in income was due to an ongoing dearth of larger planning applications since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic in 2020. A few years ago, pre-pandemic, we would have got larger planning applications taking place and we would have expected income to come through on that basis, he told the scrutiny meeting on October the 28th. Councillor Hughes said Sandwell was lacking the land availability compared to other councils, and the land it did have was contaminated because of the region's industrial history. It's a problem, and it doesn't necessarily attract the developers coming in, he added. The Cabinet Member for Regeneration said the council had created master plans for some of its towns, including Smethwick and West Bromwich, which it hoped would attract attention from developers in the future. The latest budget reports show the authority is expecting to receive at least £625,000 less than originally predicted from planning fees. The council charges for various planning applications, land charges and building control, ranging from £528 for an extension to more than £31,000 for developments. Metro fares set to increase by up to 50p per ticket in the new year. Fares for passengers who use the tram service in the West Midlands are set to increase in the new year. Midland Metro Limited, MML have proposed modest pricing rises to help cover increased running costs and ensure the service can be sustainable in the future. Members of the West Midlands Combined Authority Board will be asked to approve the fare increases when they meet on Friday. MML bosses have assured passengers revenue from ticket sales will be invested back into the service for further enhancements. They added those with concessionary passes would not be affected and that fare increases had been kept below the rate of inflation. A report to the board said single ticket prices would increase by between 20p and 50p and day tickets would rise by 30p on short distance trips and 50 to 70p on longer distances. Season tickets will increase by 10%. If agreed, a Zone 1 single ticket will go from £2.30 to £2.50, while a Zone 1 weekly pass will increase from £12.20 to £13.40. Other price increases include a single ticket from Zone 1 to 2, rising from £3.20 to £3.50. A peak day ticket Zone 1 to 2, increasing from £4.70 to £5.20. And a month ticket Zone 1 to 2 rising to £61.90, £5.60 more than now. MML bosses said a number of major developments to enhance the network would come to fruition over the next 12 months. A spokesman said these modest price rises will help us to meet increased running costs while ensuring the future sustainability of the metro. Sculpture honours workers. A monument to those who served on the home front during the Second World War was unveiled on Remembrance Sunday to honour chainmakers and other industrial workers who supplied the armed services during the Second World War. The Fighting From Home statue featuring an Admiralty-class anchor is the work of Luke Perry and has been sited in a churchyard in Cradley Heath. The features on the steel figure are based on Mr. Perry's grandfather. More than 200 people gathered for yesterday's unveiling, including many relatives of workers who worked in reserved occupations locally. It came as people across the region attended Remembrance Sunday parades and services. A photo with the article shows Luke Perry standing next to the 12-foot sculpture. It shows the upper torso of a man on a plinth. He's holding onto the top of a huge anchor.
Hello, this is Trevor reading articles from the Express and Star from Tuesday, the 11th of November. Two services share in prestigious neurological care award. Two care services in West Bromwich, which support men with brain injuries and mental health needs, is part of a network of services which have been named Best Neurological Care Provider at the Neurological Care and Complex Awards. The award given to Signet Healthcare, Neuropsychiatric Rehabilitation Services and Commitment to Improving the Lives of People Living with Complex Brain Injuries and Neurological Conditions. Signet operates 10 specialist neuro services across the UK, including 8 hospitals and 2 residential services. Its service includes Signet Heathers, a 20-bed service providing neuropsychiatric and neurodegenerative rehabilitation for men with mental health difficulties and brain injuries on Grout Street. It also includes Meadow Muse, a residential service for men with neuropsychiatric and neurodegenerative conditions in Tipton. The award highlights Signet's person-centred approach, which empowers individuals to achieve great independence and an improved quality of life. Across its specialist service, 93% of discharges were to more community-based settings, enabling individuals to step down to less restrictive environments. Judges reflected how outcomes also show a 50% reduction in behaviours that challenge and a significant reduction in psychotropic medication use, high standards are maintained through continuous staff development and a robust clinical governance framework. Get protected with your jab. From Peter Shorrick, Diabetes UK Midlands. Diabetes UK is encouraging everyone with diabetes to book their free flu jab to help protect themselves and their loved ones this winter. Catching the flu can lead to complications for people with diabetes, leaving them vulnerable to serious illness. Flu can also make diabetes harder to manage and cause blood sugar levels to rise, which increases the risk of a diabetic ketoacidosis, DKA, a life-threatening condition. The flu vaccine gives people with diabetes the best protection against flu. We recommend that everyone with the condition get in touch with their GP or local community pharmacy as soon as possible. If you need advice on how or where to get the flu jab, please contact our service helpline on 0345 123 2399 or visit diabetes.org.uk/flu. Prince George tense at mobile phone refusal. This article is by Ellie Crabb. The Prince of Wales has said that not allowing his 12-year-old son Prince George to have a mobile phone has become a little bit of a tense issue, as he spoke out about how he and Kate discussed challenges they face as a family with their children. William spoke to the broadcaster Luciano Huck in Brazil, where he travelled to stage his Earthshot prize in Rio de Janeiro. In a video Mr. Huck shared to his 23 million Instagram followers on Monday, the Prince of Wales spoke candidly about he and his wife's decision not to let Prince George, Princess Charlotte or Prince Louis have mobile phones yet. "It's really hard," he told Mr. Huck. "Our children don't have phones. I think when George moves onto secondary school, then maybe he might have a phone that has no internet access. And to be honest, it's getting to a point where it's becoming a little bit of a tense issue. But I think he understands why. We communicate why we don't think it's right. And again, I think it's the internet access I have a problem with. I think children can access too much stuff they don't need to see online. And so having a phone and a text message, the old sort of brick phone, as they call them, I think that's fine." Debrief: Hegabo Persistence, Mikey Magic and Fighting Spirit. This article's by Lewis Cox. Albion signed off for the November international break with a comeback victory over Oxford to ease any growing pressure on head coach Ryan Mason. Here we have a look at some of the latest baggage talking points in the debrief. It's not been the easiest transition to English football from his homeland for the 24-year-old striker. Through no fault of his own, he arrived with a hefty price tag of £4.7 million, which ups the onus on Hegabo to deliver. Saturday's fine header, 8 minutes after being introduced from the bench, was a first home championship goal and just a third in all competitions, his first in 10 games. Many Albion fans have developed a soft spot for Hegabo, who is clearly a very willing trier and will never give up a lost cause. His ability to sniff out a chance and goal has been questioned though, but Mason disagrees, and Saturday's winner from Isaac Price's cross is evidence of that. Mason pointed to the 10 or 15 runs the striker also made which were not picked out. Terrific Taylor. Eyebrows were raised when 32-year-old loanee Charlie Taylor, a left back, was named at centre half in a back four. He was in a back three at Charlton and fared relatively well, but this was a different call. Southampton fullback Taylor deserves a lot of credit for a fine display overall. He made countless blocks and clearances, and his big frame does add some physicality alongside Nat Phillips. Mason explained Chris Mason missed out with a fitness concern, and Christian Bielik was unable to start twice in a few days, given the long period since he last did so. With the pole feeling the effects of a first start at Charlton, centre-back George Campbell is injured. It is not ideal relying on someone out of position, but Taylor showed he can be a useful, versatile option if required. Magic Mikey. There can surely be no doubting that winger Mikey Johnson is his side's most threatening attacker when on song like that. He was a thorn in the U's back line all afternoon. In an uninspiring first period, the Republic of Ireland trickster was taking the game to the visitors on his own. He needed colleagues to step up. There was no surprise when the Oxford home goal to draw Albion level was created down Johnson's left. Mason was satisfied with the winger's work ethic on a fine individual afternoon. The only criticism that can be levelled at the former Celtic man is not enough goals and assists. And if he can improve, there will be a leading Championship player. Albion must, however, not become overly reliant on him. Show of resilience. Pressure cranked right up the stands, and when former loanee Will Langshear gleefully tapped home to open the scoring, the worst was feared, and toxicity bubbled under. Mercifully, the house took just 2 minutes to hit back, to quell some discontent. A refusal to lie down should not go unnoticed.
Welcome back to the Express and Star Pub Quiz. And this week's round, it's news. Question 1. Sir David Beckham wore a suit by which designer when he was knighted at Windsor Castle? Question 2. Which Hollywood star is donating a kidney to a stranger? Question 3. According to research, which female celebrity is said to have the sexiest voice? Question 4. Fears over a lion roaming around Irish woodlands have been allayed by police who concluded it was what animal? Question 5. The Prince of Wales visited which city to stage his Earthshot prize? Question 6. Which BBC show broke viewing records with over 11 million viewers, the biggest audience since Gavin and Stacey? Question 7. October was the UK's dullest since which year, with the country seeing an average of just 63.3 hours of sunshine? Question 8. Searches have resumed for Frankie, who has escaped from a Cornwall wildlife sanctuary. But what type of bird is Frankie? Question 9. Defence Secretary John Healey said Andrew Mountbatten Windsor would be stripped of which honorary rank awarded on his 55th birthday in 2015? And question 10. Film material from the personal archive of which Monty Python star has been donated to the BFI National Archive for preservation? How's your news knowledge? Click to the answers to find out. Here are the answers for the news round. Question 1. Sir David Beckham wore a suit by which designer when he was knighted at Windsor Castle? His wife, Victoria Beckham. Question 2. Which Hollywood star is donating a kidney to a stranger? Jesse Eisenberg. Question 3. According to research, which female celebrity is said to have the sexiest voice? Salma Hayek. Question 4. Fears over a lion roaming around Irish woodlands have been allayed by police who concluded it was what animal? A Newfoundland dog with a lion haircut called Mouse. Question 5. The Prince of Wales visited which city to stage his Earthshot prize? Rio de Janeiro. Question 6. Which BBC show broke viewing records with over 11 million viewers, the biggest audience since Gavin and Stacey? Celebrity Traitors. Question 7. October was the UK's dullest since which year, with the country seeing an average of just 63.3 hours of sunshine. 1968. Question 8. Searches have resumed for Frankie, who has escaped from a Cornwall wildlife sanctuary. But what type of bird is Frankie? A flamingo! Question 9. Defence Secretary John Healey said Andrew Mountbatten Windsor would be stripped of which honorary rank awarded on his 55th birthday in 2015? Vice Admiral. And question 10. Film material from the personal archive of which Monty Python star has been donated to the BFI National Archive for preservation? Terry Jones. Thanks for joining me in this week's quiz. I'm Sarah Ann, and I'll be back next time. Bye!
West Bromwich Albion 2, Oxford United 1. Baggies hit back to returning to winning ways report and free match highlights from the Sky Bet Championship match between West Bromwich Albion and Oxford United at the Hawthorns on Saturday. Arne Hegerbo scores as Baggies hit back from behind to seal an important win Saturday 8th November. Substitute Arne Hegerbo's winner ensured West Brom ended their recent poor run as they came from behind to beat Oxford 2-1 at the Hawthorns. The Norway striker glanced home in the 70th minute after Greg Lee's own goal ended the Baggies' 382-minute goal drought and cancelled out Will Lanxhere's opener victory, was Albion's first in five league games, and eased the supporters' growing frustrations at the indifferent form after they booed their side off at half-time. Oxford have now gone three games without a win and have suffered back-to-back defeats. Albion started on the front foot and forced five early corners, but Oxford defended them well. Isaac Price's glancing header from Mikey Johnston's corner was the closest Albion came, but Kerron Brown nodded away. Albion should have taken the lead in the 18th minute, but Josh Marger didn't react quickly enough to Premislaw Placetta's awful clearance, and Johnston's poked follow-up was saved by goalkeeper Jamie Cumming. Oxford's first foray was a Placetta shot that whistled wide. The Ewes went close to a 25th-minute breakthrough with a tremendous drive from Cameron Branigan that forced a fingertip save from Josh Griffiths. Johnston continued to look Albion's most dangerous player, and he curled a couple of yards wide after cutting inside on a mazy run. Oxford had a penalty appeal turned down in the 41st minute when on-loan Tottenham striker Lanxhere, who finished last season at Albion, appeared to be wrestled to the ground by Nat Phillips Lanxhere, who clearly had his shirt tugged, beat the ground in frustration after hitting the deck. But referee Jacob Miles decided it was a case of six of one and half a dozen of the other. The half-time whistle was greeted by a chorus of boos from frustrated Albion fans as their barren run continued. But the game burst into life with two goals in the space of 3 minutes as Oxford took the lead against the run of play. After 54 minutes, Lanxhere found the roof of the net from Placetta's cross after a speedy burst down the right, his fifth goal for United after failing to find the net for West Brom. But Albion were level 2 minutes later when Johnston's cross was turned home by Ewes' left-back Lee. The home fans had more to cheer in the 70th minute when Albion went ahead after Hegerbo glanced home Price's cross. Branigan tested Griffiths again from distance, and the goalkeeper was forced to tip his drive around the post as the Baggies held on. The manager's West Brom's Ryan Mason. "I think there's a lot, certainly in terms of goals. I really believe he can contribute a lot more in terms of numbers. You saw the type of finish it was. A really good run and a really good finish, so that's pleasing. I'm sure that's going to give him some confidence going into the games that he can help. I've never questioned his work rate and his job he does for the team. He produced a top-level performance in terms of a number nine on Tuesday night, 1-0 defeat at Charlton, and the only thing that was missing was a goal. We need to help him as much as possible to arrive in certain areas and have repetition of the ball arriving in certain areas." Oxford's Gary Rowett. "Will was backing in. It felt like Phillips dragged him to the ground. But we haven't had a penalty in well over a year. If that had happened in the middle of the pitch, it's going to be a foul. I understand the jeopardy level is higher in the box, but you can't get much higher than when your striker is dragged to the ground. Sometimes it feels that when you're a smaller team, you have to do a bit more to get those moments.
At the meeting with Sandwell Health Watch, people asked for more information about the Urgent Treatment Centre in Sandwell. Urgent Treatment Centre. The Urgent Treatment Centre is based at Sandwell Health Campus, formerly Sandwell Hospital, West Bromwich, and is accessible to all patients. It offers GP-led urgent but not emergency care for ailments such as suspected broken bones, abdominal pain and minor illnesses. Patients from all areas are able to attend. However, if they are not registered with a GP, they will be asked to sign up. The centre is open 7 days a week from 7am to 1am. Appointments can be made by calling NHS 111 or you can walk in. For life-threatening emergency care, please go to the Midland Metropolitan University Hospital A&E department, which is located in Grove Lane, Smethwick.
When you asked to receive recordings produced by the Sandwell Talking News, you gave your name and address so that we could send you our memory sticks or CDs. This information is stored in a secure database and address labels are also stored in a secure location. Having left our premises, the address labels and postal wallets are then under the protection and care of Royal Mail. Your contact details are only used for sending you our memory sticks or CDs and will never be forwarded to a third party. If you ask us to stop sending the Sandwell Talking News to you, your contact details will be deleted from our database and your address labels will be permanently destroyed. We promise and assure you that we take data protection seriously and make every effort to meet the requirements of the Data Protection Act. If your circumstances do change, you move home, change your phone number, or wish to unsubscribe to the Sandwell Talking News, please call the office on 0121 525 4810 or email sandwelltn@gmail.com so that we can make the necessary changes.
Some audio described TV programmes for the next week along with radio programme highlights from Talking News Federation. Search for publications TNF Soundings to hear these directly on their website.
TNF Soundings.
Now for the audio described television programmes for Saturday 15th of November to Friday 21st of November. Compiled by Lisa and read by Chris. BBC One has a cookery special at 11:30 on Saturday morning with Mary at 90, a lifetime of cooking when Mary Burry is joined by Jamie Oliver. This is followed at 12 by Bargain Hunt from Shrewsbury. There's more food fun on BBC Two at 12 with The Great Food Guys and over on ITV One from 11:40, Ainsley's Good Mood Food features recipes that contain fruit. Live football action can be found on BBC One at 1pm when Manchester City play Manchester United in the Women's Super League, whilst over on BBC Two, the blokes are playing too. Live coverage of the World Cup qualifier between Liechtenstein and Wales starts at 4:45, followed by Greece versus Scotland at 7:15. Thank goodness for Strictly, which starts at 6:25 on BBC One. The remaining contestants are competing for a place in next week's Blackpool Extravaganza. Then there's new drama at 9pm with Wild Cherry, set in a wealthy home counties community. For movie lovers, there's Bridget Jones' The Edge of Reason at 11:10 on BBC One, whilst ITV One offers afternoon sci-fi at 4pm with Star Wars Episode 9, The Rise of Skywalker, and late night action with Fast at 10:15, starring Vin Diesel. Channel 4 have a travel documentary, New Zealand by Train at 8pm, narrated by Julie Walters, and followed by another documentary at 9, Hitler's DNA, Blueprint of a Dictator. Then more late night movie action
with Django Unchained at 10 p.m, a darkly comic western directed by Quentin Tarantino. Now for Sunday. Daytime options are a little thin on the ground, but BBC Two has the cheery Nadia Hussein on her British food adventure at 11:30 a.m, this week visiting the West Country, followed by The Great Food Guys at 12. Over on ITV1 at 11:25 on Fletcher's Family Farm, there's concern for a struggling ewe. Catch Strictly Come Dancing, the results show, at 7:15 p.m. on BBC One, with music from Ollie Mears. And at 9 p.m, it's the concluding episode of Riot Women, with a surprise in store for Holly when the band make their first proper recording. BBC Two has an eclectic selection today, starting with Celebrity Race Across the World at 4:35 p.m, as the teams head to the second checkpoint in El Salvador. More travel at 6:35, with Eva Longoria searching for Spain, in which the actor continues her cultural journey in Asturias. Followed by World's Most Dangerous Roads at 7:15, and a classic edition of Top Gear from 2013 at 8 p.m. Bob and Paul visit Herefordshire at 9 p.m. in Mortimer and White House Gone Fishing. This week, the lovable scamps are in search of a big, beautiful perch. If it's football you're searching for, ITV1 have international action with Albania versus England at 4 p.m, both teams' final World Cup qualifier. There's movie action on Channel 4 at 6:20 p.m. with Men in Black 2, a sci-fi comedy sequel starring Will Smith, followed by Game of Wool, Britain's best knitter, at 8 p.m. Then a brand new drama at 9 p.m, Summer Water, in which a Scottish lockside holiday park turns out to be a rather from relaxing retreat. And it rains a lot. Turning now to this week's soap schedule. Monday it's EastEnders at 7:30 p.m. on BBC One, and Emmerdale and Corrie on ITV1 at 7:30 and 8 p.m. respectively. Tuesday has EastEnders at 7:30 p.m. and Emmerdale at 7:30 p.m. Wednesday it's EastEnders at 7:30 p.m. with Emmerdale and Corrie at 7:30 and 8 p.m. Thursday is EastEnders at 7:30 and Emmerdale at 8 p.m. And on Friday it's Emmerdale at 7:30 and Corrie at 8 p.m. Moving on to Monday the 17th of November. Daytime schedules are a little thin, but there's always Homes Under the Hammer at 11:30 a.m. on BBC One, and Wild Scandinavia on BBC Two at 4:15 p.m. BBC One's evening highlight is the new series of Celebrity MasterChef at 9 p.m, whilst BBC Two have Once Upon a Time in Space at 9 p.m, the final part of a documentary about life on the International Space Station, followed at 10 p.m. by Leonard and Hungry Paul, episode 5 of the comedy drama series. There's a new series of Inside the World's Most Luxurious Cruises at 8 p.m. on Channel 4, followed by episode 2 of Summer Water at 9 p.m, where it's probably still raining. If you fancy a late-night game show, Lee Mack hosts the 1% Club at 11:20 p.m. on ITV1, where 11 contestants set out to answer increasingly difficult logic problems. And on to Tuesday. A classic daytime double bill on BBC One with Homes Under the Hammer at 11:30 a.m, followed by Bargain Hunt at 12:15 p.m. Then at 2:30, in Make It at Market, a stone carver and a stained glass artist are seeking help. BBC Two has Wild Scandinavia at 4:15, focusing on ravens that can outsmart golden eagles. BBC One's evening schedule offers another helping of Celebrity MasterChef at 8 p.m. Then there's an interesting documentary at 10:40. In My Own Words, Yinka Shonibare, in which the Nigerian artist talks about his life and work. Yet more international football at 7:30 p.m. on BBC Two, in which Scotland meet Denmark in the World Cup qualifier from Hampden Park, Glasgow. Channel 4 has the Great Celebrity Bake Off for Stand Up to Cancer at 8 p.m, in which Matt Lucas welcomes more famous faces to the tent to test their baking skills. Followed by Episode 3 of Summer Water at 9 p.m, then more celebs at 10 p.m. in Celebrity Gogglebox. It's Wednesday with more Homes Under the Hammer at 11:30 on BBC One and another Bargain Hunt at 12:15 p.m. At 2:30 p.m. in Make It at Market, it's the turn of a potter and a jewellery artist to try and turn their passions into profit. BBC One's evening highlight is Sarah Cox, Every Step of the Way for Children in Need. Cameras follow the popular DJ presenter as she covers 135 miles on foot through the north of England, raising money for children in need. This is followed by Episode 3 of Shetland at 9 p.m, when events in Luniswick turn more violent as Ruth and Tosh continue their investigation. Over on BBC Two at 7:30 p.m, it's another episode of Mary at 90, when Alex Jones joins Dame Maryberry to celebrate how the cook's friends and family have been at the heart of her career. Followed at 9 p.m. by Highland Cops, which focuses on the work of police officers on the Isle of Skye. Stay with BBC Two at 9 p.m. for Turner, The Secret Sketchbooks. In this arena documentary, actor Timothy Spall tells the life story of the artist through an archive of 37,000 sketches and watercolours. Channel 4 has a new series of grand designs, House of the Year, at 8 p.m, when Kevin MacLeod visits some of the most extraordinary homes in Britain. Britain's Most Expensive Houses is at 11:05 p.m, featuring a £3.7 million Cotswold manor with a secret garden. Now for Thursday. Eric Knowles presents Bargain Hunts from Leinster in Herefordshire at 12:15 p.m. on BBC One. Over on BBC Two, there's an afternoon nature programme with Liz Bonin's Wild Caribbean at 4:15 p.m, when the presenter heads to the Greater Antilles. BBC One's evening schedule offers Celebrity Race Across the World at 8 p.m, followed by the quarterfinal of Celebrity MasterChef at 9 p.m. There's Women's Championships League Football at 7:30 p.m. on BBC One, with live commentary of Chelsea versus Barcelona from Stamford Bridge. Channel 4 has George Clark's Remarkable Renovations at 8 p.m, when the architect meets a couple hoping to transfer a dilapidated barn into a beautiful country home. This is followed at 9 p.m. by Cancer Detectives Finding the Cures, a new series focusing on the trailblazing scientists taking on the disease. And finally, it's Friday, and Homes Under the Hammer visits South Wales and Lancashire at 11:30 on BBC One, whilst Escape to the Country visits Argyll and Bute at 2:45. A slightly more exotic location for Liz Bonin at 4:15 on BBC Two, when she goes on the trail of a jaguar in Belize in part two of Liz Bonin's Wild Caribbean. ITV One has a new series of Sarah Davis's Christmas Craft Off at 2 p.m, when three celebrities are taught how to turn a room into a festive experience. And yet we're still in November. Bah humbug. BBC One's evening highlights include episode 3 of light-hearted crime drama Return to Paradise at 8 p.m. and a new series of the comedy Daddy Issues at 9:35 p.m. BBC Two offers the final part of Empire with David Olusoga at 9 p.m, in which the historian investigates the end of the British Empire, followed by Inside Number 9 at 10 p.m, starring Maxine Peake and Steve Pemberton. Over on Channel 4, there's Unreported World at 7:30 p.m, focusing on Tenerife's squatter problem, which clearly doesn't get a mention in the holiday brochures. This is followed at 8 p.m. by Secrets of Super Cheap Shopping, focusing this week on price-cutting pet food retailers. And that concludes this week's ADTV listings. Hopefully there's something here for everyone.
This is Gilly Hamilton with the radio listings for the 7 days beginning Saturday the 15th of November. And beginning with Saturday the 15th at 12 p.m. on Radio 3. The London Jazz Festival began last night and pianist Jules Holland introduces guest artists and reveals his personal classic selections. The magnificent voice of Richard Burton is among that of other Welsh actors in a radio play of 1959 that explores the role of German officers who planned to assassinate Hitler. You will find the play, Treason, on Radio 4 Extra at 5 p.m. This World War II theme is continued in a documentary about the Nuremberg Tribunals on Radio 3 at 8 p.m. Archive on 4, Nuremberg Remembered. Moving on to Sunday the 16th. The Castaway on Desert Island Discs at 10 a.m. Radio 4 is Tim Berners-Lee, the creator of the World Wide Web. And a classic tale for many of us is Kenneth Graham's Wind in the Willows. And on Radio 4 at 3 p.m, Tom Morton Smith presents his alternative take on this classic favourite, told from the point of view of a young weasel. Wild Animals also feature in an edition of Words and Music on Radio 3 at 6 p.m. on the theme of mice, rats and squirrels. We hear from the works of Beatrix Potter, among others. Now, we suggest programmes that are broadcast at the same time every day from Monday to Friday. The book of the week is The Punch, in which Jacob Dunn traces the key moments in his life since he killed a man with a single punch in a street brawl. It begins on Radio 4 at 11:45 a.m. The first of 5 broadcasts centred on the lives of endangered animals, A Carnival of Animals, begins on Radio 4 at 1:45 p.m. The composer of the week on Radio 3 at 2 p.m. is Richard Wagner. The book at bedtime at 10:45 p.m. on Radio 4 is Virginia and Catherine, which explores the friendship and rivalry between the writers Virginia Woolf and Catherine Mansfield. Returning now to some individual suggestions, beginning with Monday the 17th. Throughout the day, Radio 3 celebrates the career of the conductor Charles Mackerras. A good starting place would be the 2 p.m. concert, which includes music by Elgar and Beethoven. A welcome return for one of the funniest programmes on the radio is I'm Sorry I Haven't a Clue on Radio 4 at 6:30 p.m. Jack D hosts the comedy panel game, which comes from Southampton. Another favourite returns in an original play for radio featuring Oxford's Detective Morse, who must solve the murder of a morally dubious Oxford don. Morse
in the Shallows is on Radio 4 Extra at 8:30 p.m. Now to Tuesday the 18th. Shearwaters, a powerful psychological thriller set on a remote wildlife reserve, is on Radio 4 at 2:15 p.m. The past threatens to catch up with Ruth, who lives there with her partner and daughter, and which forces her to take drastic action. The advance of AI hangs over all of us, and in OK Computer, Music in the Age of AI, on Radio 4 at 4 p.m, radio producer Giles Martin explores the influence of this powerful new technology on recorded music. The career of the multi-talented June Whitfield has been celebrated on the radio the past weeks, and you can hear her as Miss Marple in a dramatisation of Agatha Christie's The Body in the Library on Radio 4 Extra at 8:30 p.m. Wednesday the 19th. A caver whose fall caused multiple injuries and led to the longest cave rescue in UK history, with 300 cavers coming to his aid, reflects on his experience in Life Changing on Radio 4 at 9 a.m. Brian Cox stars in a dramatisation of Peter Lovsey's 8th Sergeant Crib novel, Waxwork, on Radio 4 Extra at 2:30 p.m. A woman admits to murder, but Crib has a niggling sense that her story doesn't ring true. The Russian leader, Stalin, was responsible for one of the worst man-made famines in history. The causes behind this are examined in the documentary The Great Hunger on BBC World Service at 10:05 p.m. Next, Thursday the 20th. The vastly informative programme In Our Time has come to an end after 27 years. To mark this, some well-known fans have been invited to choose their favourite episode. And at 9 a.m. on Radio 4 Extra, music presenter Guy Garvey selects the broadcast on Eclipses from 2020. Another chance to explore the great outdoors comes at 3 p.m. on Radio 4, when Claire Balding's Ramblings takes us across the dramatic landscape of Rasili Bay in Wales. The increasing power of China in the world market is examined in the documentary China's Global Spending Spree. It's on BBC World Service at 8:05 p.m. The programme looks at the proposition that China might be even more powerful than anyone has previously assumed. For lovers of cricket, the first day of the Ashes series begins in Perth and is broadcast on BBC 5 Sports Extra from 1:35 a.m. and continues at this time for all of the 5 days. Finally, Friday the 21st. The food programme on Radio 4 at 11 a.m. focuses on the winners of the annual Food and Farming Awards and meets some of the best food and drink producers in the country. Giles Martin, son of the Beatles producer George Martin, discusses a new instalment of the Beatles anthology, which he has curated, when he appears as a guest on BBC 6 Music, Greg Charles, at 1 p.m. Ever wondered why we cry for emotional reasons? It may seem obvious, but that and other related questions form the basis of a fascinating programme, Crowd Science, Why Do We Cry? BBC World Service at 8:30 p.m. Presenter Caroline Steele asks, among other things, what purposes does crying serve? What are the 3 categories of crying? Over on Classic FM at 9 p.m, the organist and choir director introduces her selection of music by Holst and Elgar, among others in Anna Lapwood's Choral Classics. The Ashes Test from Perth continues on BBC Sports Extra, 11 a.m. And if that's too early for you, the highlights of day one are broadcast between 11 a.m. and 7 p.m. on the same channel. We wish you an enjoyable, interesting and entertaining week's listening.
TNS Soundings.
TNF Soundings.
Hello, this is Charlotte from Guide Dogs, back for another update on Buster's training. This has been a busy month for Buster, and he's been making some really excellent progress. I've introduced the guiding harness, and he's taken to this really well. The harnesses are made of leather and are quite heavy compared with anything he will have worn before, so they can take some getting used to. Buster took it in his stride, though, and will put his head in by himself when I ask him for a head in. He walks at a nice moderate pace and pulls through the harness with a medium amount of tension. Usually when dogs come into training, they want to do everything at top speed and need calming down, but Buster is very relaxed during his harness walks. While this is great at the moment, it does make me wonder how motivated he will be as the training gets more demanding and our routes get longer and more varied. Some of our dogs are very self-motivated and will walk anywhere for the pleasure of being out and about. However, Buster likes to have an element of the walk that is for him. He particularly likes destinations like cafes and libraries, somewhere that he can have a sit down and bask in the attention that he so often receives. At the moment, we are working mostly in busier town environments like St Albans. This is a great environment for training as it's so varied with busy areas, quiet side streets, shops and some heavier traffic. There is also the added benefit of being a dog-heavy environment, as Buster is a little underconfident around other dogs and needs lots of exposure to as many different breeds as possible at the moment. This month we have also covered bus travel, which Buster is enjoying. He hasn't quite mastered tucking himself in under the seats yet and does like to sprawl out right in the way of other passengers to attract maximum attention, so this is something we will be working on in the coming weeks. Buster is not overly distracted by anything on his walks, which is fantastic considering he hasn't been in training for long. He will have a cheeky sniff if we're passing a hedge or a lamppost, but this doesn't interfere with his work. He will have a look at cats and birds, but again, it's easy to regain his attention. Buster's biggest distraction at the moment is people, especially if they pay attention to him. Buster is a very cute dog and has puppy-like features, which does make him a bit of a celebrity. I've been working on refocusing him after he is distracted by a member of the public, which has been going well. We all know that guide dogs shouldn't be distracted at work, but you can never account for the actions of strangers, so I always like to focus on training my dogs to be relaxed and placid if someone does try to distract him. Since the sock-eating incident, Buster has been on his best behaviour, but I am still strengthening his response to drop and rewarding him for ignoring trigger items like tissues when we're out and about. Based on his progress this month, I am quite confident that Buster is growing out of this behaviour. Since Buster has come into training, he has had several incidents of stopping on walks. This usually happens when we are leaving somewhere like a cafe or a free run that he's really enjoyed. Each time I've waited it out and he's decided to carry on by himself, but this is certainly a behaviour to monitor with a dog like Buster who can be quite motivated by his own agenda. In the next month, I'm aiming to gradually increase Buster's stamina for harness work. We will cover trains and possibly overground if this goes well. I will also be taking him to indoor shopping centres to teach him how to safely navigate in open spaces and non-pavement conditions. Overall, Buster is right on track and I'm really pleased with his progress. I'll be back in a month's time for another update.
TNF Soundings.
Free Christmas lights switch on events in Sandwell, starting from Friday the 14th of November. The countdown has begun for our annual Sandwell Christmas lights switch on events. Join us for festive celebrations as we light up our towns with switch on events running from Friday the 14th of November until Friday the 5th of December. First up are Crankhall Lane, Friar Park on Friday the 14th of November and Blackheath on Saturday the 15th of November. We are offering free family-friendly nights full of magical Christmas fun. It's time to kick off the festive season, and the information below details where you need to be. Come and join us at our light-up locations with entertainment, music, stalls, and plenty of Christmas cheer. Here are where you will find our Christmas lights switch-ons: Crankhall Lane, Friar Park, near the post office. Friday 14th November from 4 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. Switch on at 7 p.m. Blackheath, High Street. Saturday, 15th November from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Switch on at 6:30 p.m. Smethwick, Council House. Thursday 20th November from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Switch on at 5:45 p.m. Bearwood, near the clock. Friday 21st November from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Switch on at 5:45 p.m. Wensbury, near the clock tower. Saturday 22nd November from 1 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. Switch on at 6 p.m. West Bromwich, Farley Fountain behind Primark. Saturday 22nd November from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. Switch on at 5:15 p.m. Tipton, Unity Walk. Friday 28th November from 4 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. Switch on at 6:15 p.m. Langley, High Street. Saturday 29th November from 5 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. Switch on at 5:30 p.m. Oldbury, between Sandwell Council House and Sainsbury's. Friday 5th December from 3 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. Switch on at 6 p.m. Councillor Suzanne Hartwell, Deputy Leader and Cabinet Member for Neighbourhoods and Community, said, "Our free Sandwell Christmas Lights switch-on events are such a joyous occasion in our towns as we all join together with families, friends and neighbours to celebrate the start of the festive season. We are proud to continue such a well-loved tradition while also supporting local businesses and showcasing what our community has to offer. As these events begin, we encourage our residents to join and enjoy Christmas lights, festive music and create jolly memories as a community. All events are free to attend and there is no need to book. Please visit our road closures webpage for temporary road closure updates. sandwell.gov.uk/roadclosures.
TNF Soundings.
This is Jan with some seasonal tips and ideas from the gardening expert at the MK Pulse magazine based in Milton Keynes. Stand tall for our trees. If you want to reconnect with yourself and press pause on the stress in your life, a walk amongst nature is the easiest way to perk yourself up. It's a simple, free way to exercise, and if done regularly, studies show that it can reduce the risk of poor mental health. More than ever, we need to learn to appreciate the wonder of nature, and yet we seem to find more reasons than ever to justify the destruction of our green spaces. The deliberate act of vandalism of one of the country's most photographed trees, the sycamore gap tree, saw the collective anger of the nation cut loose. The sycamore gap tree is an iconic example of a tree lost to stupidity. But across the country, people justify the removal of trees every day. When it was announced lime trees on the walks in Wellingborough were to be felled to make way for work on a dual carriageway to begin, protests ensued. Just the same as when we dismantle ancient buildings that have stood proud for centuries, replacing them with modernistic travesties, there is no way back once a tree has been removed from the landscape. What is the best way to mark such losses? By engaging the next generation in the importance of trees. By nurturing an appreciation in our children so that they care enough to make a change for the better. This autumn, take that walk in the woods with the family. Harvest some of those acorns or conkers and help your children grow their own saplings. It's a great way to spend family time and a welcome break from staring at those screens we carry everywhere with us. Children will get a real sense of satisfaction as their saplings grow, and in some small way you'll be helping to counteract some of the devastation that is now all too frequent. And with Christmas coming, why not swap that cheap bottle of chockies you offer and instead give the gift of a tree? The National Trust is one of many charities offering the service and, as its website says, quite simply, trees are essential for life. They clean the air we breathe, lock up carbon as they grow, and provide homes for wildlife.
What could be better gift than that? And you won't need to wrap it. So, how does your garden grow? Early November is the best time for autumn colour in the garden. Strong winds loosen tree stakes and ties, and those need to be checked. Damage to the bark of some ornamental and fruit trees was found. Bare root trees and roses are now available and should be stood in water before planting. Liberally sprinkle mycorrhizal fungi on them to encourage plant growth. The rows of salad greens were covered by plastic cloches, which have saved them from damage by heavy rain. They are providing additions to the school's meals. A large root of rhubarb was dug up, divided and planted elsewhere, leaving room for two short rows of broad beans, Aqua Dulce Claudia, to be fitted in, and a row of garlic cloves pressed in firmly after a mulch of fresh compost has been added. I'm also sowing sweet peas 1 centimetre deep in pots of fresh multi-purpose compost. Pelargoniums and fuchsias potted up from the garden must be kept frost-free in the greenhouse or in a cool, light room. Continuing to feed the birds and keeping the bird bath topped up is an important routine. What happened to bonfire night?
DNF Soundings.
We're nearing the end of what will turn out to be a rather shorter edition than usual for this week, but I thought, with the time left to us, I'd catch up with the talk that Peter Clovier, who is the son of Sue Clovier, who chooses all the items for us in the paper. He was a journalist at the Express and Star, as you may remember from a month or two ago when we had an excerpt from his talk. This extract reflects on what he did when he left the Express and Star and some interesting insights on how you edit and put a paper together.
Now, just so you know what I do, to add context, is I left the Express and Star, went to London in the year 2000, got a really boring job and a really boring magazine about corporate law, stuck it for 2 weeks, joined the Daily Mail, did that for 4 years, and then joined the Sun and was on the Sun for 16 years doing the news desk. So that's, again, you know, telling the reporters what to do, telling them to go on death knocks. And now I work for a ridiculous PR firm that tries to make companies a bit more famous. So we might be working with McDonald's and Marks and Spencer's, which is quite interesting. Their big, M&S's big problem is they want to close all their shops and open up the food halls. How do they stop people hating them for closing the shops and just being a food place? And McDonald's, their big problem, not that it's particularly interesting, but they used to be restaurants, and now they're sort of collection points where lots of delivery drivers in helmets are standing outside, and you have to fight your way past the helmeted guys, and it's a very unpleasant experience. So they want people to love them, even though they won't change their business model. Anyway, it's the same process. It's telling a story. The Express and Star was all about telling a story, and telling corporate PR is about telling their stories. So how I learned was I finished university and went to this place the Express and Star had. The Express and Star was really big back then. It sold 250,000 copies a day. Now it sells 8,500 copies a day. And to put it in context, the Daily Mirror sells about 180,000. So the Express and Star in the late 90s sold more than the Daily Mirror and the Financial Times does put together nowadays. So it was really big. It had had loads of staff. And it really felt quite a sort of... It was the biggest local newspaper in the country. And we used to laugh at the Manchester Evening News and kick sand in the face of the Liverpool Echo, because, and especially the Birmingham Evening Mail, because we were so much bigger than them. So they had their own training scheme where you went into this place called Rock House in Tettenhall, and there was about a dozen of us, half from the Shropshire, who were going to go on to the Shropshire Star, and half were going to go on to the Express and Star. So it was a bunch of Black Country people and a bunch of Shropshire people, and we all sort of, there was massive rivalry between them, because we all thought the Shropshire people were all richer and posher, and we were less rich and posh. And we learnt about law and how you have to tell the truth, because that's... I know some people think that journalists never able to tell the truth and you can't trust them. But in fact, from day one, it was always, if you tell the if you lie, you'll be found out and you'll be fired, because the smallest mistake can have incredibly bad unintended consequences, like getting the date of a U3A meeting can confuse loads of people, or getting someone's name wrong or someone's age wrong drives them up the wall. So it was all like, accuracy is everything. And we did things like, we did fun exercises, like they put us all in a minibus and drive us out to Shifnal and just unleash all these 20-year-olds on Shifnal Village and say, go and find stories. So we'd go to the church notice board and see if there was a knitting class going on, and see if someone had vandalised the community centre, or a streetlight not working in Shifnal, that's big news. And just anything that was happening. And it taught us this idea that news is anything, really. It's anything that people don't know about that might be of use to them. And we learnt shorthand. We had to do 100 words a minute, and you had to sit down in front of the TV news, because the BBC News is always, was then, read out at 100 words a minute. So if you could keep up with what the BBC newsreader was saying, then you had 100 words a minute, because no one talks much more quickly than that. And, you know, it's, you can work it out. So we did all that, and then we were unleashed. Me to the Wurzel Chronicle. There was Andy Toft, who's now working on Match of the Day. Because it's the other thing, because the Expression Star was so big, when you went from there, you could stroll into the Daily Mail, you could stroll into Match of the Day. There's a woman, Philippa, who went to Sky News and then GB News, and I don't know what she's doing now. And Mark Andrews, who still writes for the Expression Star, was on my training course. So we sort of... it was a passport to much, much greater things. And we all went in there thinking, this will be fine, this will be funny. And I was put, like I say, onto the Warsaw Chronicle. And how we got stories, the rivalry with the Express and Star was intense. So we would pick up their phones and pretend to be the Express and Star and nick their stories. We would go over to their desk and literally steal their post and then write stories from it. The Express and Star lot hated us, and we hated them. And that rivalry was what made the paper really good, because in Warsaw, we thought everyone disliked Wolverhampton, the Wolverhampton office, because they were the head office and they were snooty and they thought we were all a bit weird. People, Warsaw and West Brom were kind of about the same. People from Dudley were all weird. People in, like, Kidderminster, Lichfield, Stafford were all yokels who lived out, like, might as well be farmers. And there was this sense of we're all trying to beat each other and be better than the others. And that extended to everything. The Evening Mail, Warsaw, Lichfield, Samwell. When I was at the... we used to do a lot of Worley Magistrates Court, because, of course, Crown Court would be Wolverhampton. West Bromwich Magistrates didn't do very much, but Worley was all the crime was. And you'd go to Worley Magistrates or Wolverhampton Crown, and you'd see the Evening Mail had turned up, and you'd be like, great. So when they went to the loo, you'd get their notebook and rip it up so they couldn't write a report on it. Or you'd, or they'd say, oh, is this really big murder case happening here? No, that's Court 3, mate. And get them to leave so they got the wrong courtroom. And we all thought they were terrible. But it was fun, because you sort of wanted to do each other down a lot and make yourself better. So at the Chronicle, I was trying to think about what things I did at the Chronicle. So back in 97, it was the state of Warsaw Town Centre, which was crap then and is crap now. The new art gallery, the number of stories we all wrote about the new art gallery, about will it happen? And there was this poor sweet people at the Warsaw Art Gallery were saying, oh, we've got Jacob Epstein's sculptures. None of us knew who Jacob Epstein was. No one knew who any of the artists were. And I'm not sure whether the people of Warsaw did either, but you'd try and, oh, it's going to be really great. It's great for the town. It's really exciting. The fight to save Highgate Brewery, which was obviously lost, and loads of crime about karma. Like, Magistrates Court was always shoplifters, prostitutes, fights, in that order. Thieves, prostitutes, fights. And after a while of going to Worley Magistrates, you'd see the same faces come up again and again and again. And you learnt, this was a great thing about the Express and Star, you learn very quickly which were the dodgy estates, which were the same surnames kept coming up for certain crimes or prostitution, what the councillors really wanted to do and what they couldn't do. And you've got a real sense of the community. And it's also Warsaw's and then West Bromwich, how I learned about the structure of newspapers, which was the same on the Warsaw Chronicle as it was on the Sun, which is you've got like the editor, and it is this is for all newspapers now, the editor is kind of in charge of everything, which means they're trying to make sure the vans can deliver the papers, they're trying to get advertisers to advertise with you, they're running it as a business, they want to make sure they've got the right staff, and once a day they'll sit in a room with a dozen people and decide what the most important stories are. And newspapers are put together all the same. You have the, obviously the best story of the day goes on the front, and then the best stories are on the right hand facing pages, so on 3, 5, 7, 9, 11. Generally people get bored of reading news by about page 9, so on page 10 you want all the comment and this is what we think should happen with the world. You want to have a few nice pictures. All the sport goes at the back. That's its own weird sort of how that works. I've never really understood. And in the middle is the kind of longer reads, is the sort of the bit where you get to, you know, enjoy your coffee and biscuits. But the most important thing of any newspaper is what everyone calls the furniture, which is the puzzles and the Sudoku and the cartoon. And if you ever mess with any of those things, people go nuts. At the Sun, we change the font, which is the size of the type of the TV listings, to reflect when Netflix and Amazon Prime came in. And we lost 500,000 readers in about 2 weeks because people couldn't read it. And they said, I'm not buying your paper, I can't read it. And there was an Express and Star, if you ever, ever repeated a horoscope, because, you know, it's a trade secret, but horoscopes aren't really science. And quite often you'd put, you know, Aries in that you was Cancer 3 months ago, and people would notice immediately and say, you've done this and this is wrong. And you'd go, ugh. And they'd say, I'm never reading your paper again. It's absolute rubbish. You can't get the horoscopes right. This is terrible. So that the cartoons moved, everything has to be exactly where people expect it to be. Otherwise they go nuts. And all the journalists and the editors were like, look at this brilliant story. This will really move people. This will really provoke a reaction, or this campaign will be fantastic. Fine, but you muck up the horoscopes or the crossword and it doesn't matter at all. So the editor does all that. And then beneath the editor, which in most cases is a he, but quite often a she, you've got the news, the various desks. So the sports desk say, you know, oh, there's a big football match next week, let's write about that. Features will do, this is what everyone's talking about. So at the moment, with national papers, it's all, you know, what the Labour reshuffle will mean and what to do about immigration and what should we do about all the flags. Is that scary or good or bad or patriotic or racist about all these flags everywhere? Then you've got the showbiz people, which the Express and Star had a bit of showbiz back then, but in national papers it's all about the fluff and the silliness and the TV. And then the news editor, which is what I was, which is obviously the best job, which is when you decide what are the most important stories of the day and what are the boring ones. And also, as you're going through the paper, as it was with the Chronicle and the Express and Star, is you want a mixture of light and shade, so, or happy and sad. So if you have murder, 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 or crime, or all of this, then it's boring to read, it's depressing, it's miserable. You need to have fun, you need to have uplifting silliness. And, you know, we've all seen those pictures when it's A-level results day of relatively pretty girls jumping up in the air. Every single year is always the same. And that picture gets bigger and bigger depending on whether it's a sad day or not. And if there's a cute animal picture, happy, brilliant, use it big. If I was looking at this old Express and Star we looked at last night, had something really boring, like the opening of a garden somewhere, you know, that opens every year, it was the beginning of spring. And it was all full bright colour and they were wearing silly hats and pulling funny faces, because there's so much gloomy news that you've got to try. The challenge with news is always to find the happy stuff, the joyful stuff. And every editor is desperate for happy stuff. But you know, it's quite hard to find, because if life is good, why would you tell the newspaper about it? You wouldn't. You sort of celebrate it internally. You wouldn't bother to tell the world about it. But if life is bad, you want to share it, you want something done about it. So at the Cron, we had an endless queue of people coming in to say, my life's rubbish, can you do something about it? And people phoning up, and the ones you'd be wary of were the ones that said, I've got all the documents, or it's a conspiracy, or the council's definitely in the pay of Tesco or whatever. Because you'd think, well, A, no, it's not, and B, we can't prove that, and C, I don't know, you're a bit mad. But you'd be always listening to what people said to think, well, is there a story in there, or have you noticed something? And you get stories just by wandering around, seeing what's going on in the area, which we did loads. So that was the Chronicle.
And a thank you to the U3A and Peter for allowing us to record that talk. And at the end, or towards the end, I think it's interesting to note how important pictures are in the papers, because especially since the advent of colour some years ago, people do like colourful pictures that almost tell a story in themselves, which is why some years ago we took to trying to describe some of the pictures that go with the articles in the paper. And do remember, of course, that some of our readers, listeners, could see to read the paper at one time, and so appreciate what the pictures are conveying in the paper. Well, over to Pam now for a round of thanks to everyone who's contributed to this week's edition.
Thank you to all our volunteers who've read the Express and Star articles for us. They were Mia, Jan, Rachel, Linda, Janet and Trevor. Thanks to Sarah Ann for reading the quiz questions, to Sue for selecting the articles everyone's read this week, to Sarita for uploading everything. Thanks to Ray for editing everything and putting it all together, and to Gavin and Tony for creating the CDs and USB sticks and sending everything out to you. Have a lovely week, everyone.
A big thank you to you as well, Pam, as you're always there in the background, usually, when you're not reading articles yourself, coordinating the reading of the paper with the dozen or so readers we have these days. Well, it's certainly getting wetter, and it's going to be colder come the next week. And so winter is coming on. So I hope it won't be too rainy or cold when we have the Samuel Visually Impaired Annual Forum next Monday in Albury. I'll be there, and I hope I'll meet some of our regular listeners as well as other people in SVI. Though the Talking News is still really a separate operation from SVI, we certainly get a lot of help with the office space needed to copy the paper onto CDs and pen drives and post it out to you, as most of our listeners are still listening via the postal edition. But to remind you, the podcast and the streaming edition is usually up there a day or two before the postal edition reaches listeners on Saturday. Sarita does that job faithfully every week, and because we're a bit earlier this week, it may well be that the podcast and the streaming internet version of the paper will arrive on the website by Thursday and Friday at the latest this week. That is it though for this week. Hope you've enjoyed listening, and we'll be back with you after the annual forum next week. Might be able to include a few items from that, as we'll be recording a few interviews. But for now, bye-bye from me, Ray, and all the team. Do get the pen drives back to us on time, please. We'll be with you all again next week. Bye-bye for now.
To use our talk phone service to listen to Sandwell Talking News or leave us a message, phone 0121 699 6696. If you are using a landline in the 0121 area, then just dial 699 6696.